Hello and welcome to the DebtWire podcast. I'm your host, Quinn Yang, reporter covering retail and healthcare for DebtWire North America. Today, I'm joined by Ian Frederick, Chief Executive Officer of Capital Solutions at Hilco. Welcome to the show. Ian has been a leading voice in retail and consumer restructuring since joining Hilco in 2011. He was recognized as a top retail expert by Rethink Retail in 2024. Before Hilco, Ian practiced restructuring law at Staden & Young Conaway. So Ian, to set the table, the first half of 2026 has been relatively quiet on the retail distress front. What's been holding things up? Has anything changed in the last few weeks?
Well, thank you so much for having me here. And I would say it doesn't feel like things have been slow, but I agree. In terms of restructuring, things have been slow. What we've seen over the first part of the year is really, I think, an increase in just overall volatility in the markets. And what we haven't seen yet is that really trickle through to retail, other than in the last couple of weeks. And I think what's happened over the last couple of weeks are a couple of things. Number one, the volatility index has gone through the roof. The volatility index that's released by the Fed and is on the FRED website, the Federal Reserve Economic Data site, it's actually higher now than it was basically at any point over the last 25 years. So higher than COVID, higher than the 2008 financial crisis, higher than 9/11. So we're at a period of extreme volatility. We also, I think, saw the Michigan Consumer Index over the last couple of weeks. And I can't remember if it was an all-time low or it was certainly a recent low, but that dropped precipitously. I think the one thing that has been propping up the consumer and retail is the consumer finally realized the benefits from the tax bill that was passed last year. Those benefits to the average American largely are going to come through in the form of tax refunds. You had various changes to the deductions and certain things not being taxed. And I think a lot of that now has worked its way into the economy, into consumer savings or pocketbooks, such that they've been using that over the last, call it, 4 months. And probably we'll see a little bit more of a tail given that yesterday was tax day. So I think people will still be getting their refunds. But once that goes through, I think you have a much weaker consumer, especially for the less affluent consumers.
Yeah, speaking of consumers, I think we've been hearing a lot about the K-shaped consumer market, where the average shopper is being squeezed by inflation, but the richer ones continue to spend. How much of that dynamics is still in place, or are we starting to see cracks at the top as well?
Yeah, it's definitely still in play. And just so everybody can appreciate it, it took me a little bit when I first heard it to figure it out. Basically, take a K and turn it on its side. And so in that instance, you almost have a straight line with a V meeting in the middle. On the left side, the why they call it a K-shaped consumer is that consumer is getting weaker at the same time that the more affluent or wealthier consumer is getting stronger. So that's why they're going in different directions, is the way to think about it. With the average consumer, as I mentioned, they did receive a bit of a bump relative to the tax refunds or the incremental tax benefits they've been realizing over the last several months. What's happened with the more affluent consumer, that consumer has really been the one that has been propping up the consumer side of the economy for some time now. And so this isn't a recent phenomenon over the last, call it, 4 or 6 months. It's been going on probably through most of 2025. And I would say a big part of that has been the rise in the stock market. Despite all of the challenges and volatility that we've had since early in 2025 with the change in the administration, the stock market has largely weathered the storm. With the recent war in Iran, we saw I think the markets all moved into correction territory. So they dropped in some instances a little over 10%, but they've largely rebounded since, and at least over the last week. But that volatility in the stock market, people seeing less money in their portfolios, has definitely been causing them to spend less. And I think you're starting to see that in some of the reporting that's been coming out from some of the luxury retailers that are public. Their stock prices have been getting hurt. They've been seeing some challenges in terms of revenue. And I think that's going to continue. I think people are uncertain about what the future holds, and that more affluent consumer is going to, I think, pull back some. And I think we're going to, and then I, at the same time, you're going to lose the tax benefits. that I think is a real weakness problem for consumer and retail and the economy as a whole in the near term.
Right. I guess like the one way to pressure test the wealthier consumer is definitely to look at the luxury market. Saks Global is probably one of the most talked about situations of last year. The Lehman Brothers Saks deal is supposed to create like a super dominant luxury platform, but instead it created this debt-heavy company that's facing the luxury slowdown at the worst time possible. Do we have any lessons from Saks, or maybe does that tell us anything about the health of high-end consumer right now?
Yeah, look, I can't speak specifically about Saks because we're in it, but there are some lessons I think that are broader than just Saks. And then I can speak a little bit to how I think that impacts the consumer. One of the challenges with retail, and you saw this with kind of the rise in private equity, was to acquire retail either through some kind of LBO or potentially put debt on it through some type of dividend recap. Retail is a very difficult sector to load up a business with debt. And I think, as you mentioned, you saw that in Saks. Like the Saks-Neiman merger resulted in a highly leveraged business. And in retail in general, anytime you have a highly leveraged business, there isn't much room for error. If you do have some weakness in the consumer, that can have a significant impact on free cash that the business can use. With high debt service, if you have a lot of debt and you have a lot of debt service, a lot of that free cash goes to pay interest. If you try to, as a retailer, go chase revenue by discounting the goods, now you're shrinking your gross margin. And in just driving more revenue may not result in more gross margin dollars. It actually can often result in less gross margin dollars. Less gross margin dollars negatively impacts your cash flow, and it creates this vicious cycle. I would say the other thing that debt creates as a problem for retail is you don't have the ability to then use excess free cash to improve your stores and enhance your customer experience. And so the more highly levered a business is, I would say the worse that business is going to be able to service its customer. And so that customer is going to go look for better service or a better experience, or frankly, a better assortment at another retailer. And that's the big risk for retail. I think probably in luxury, as that luxury consumer, because let's not forget, April, around this time last year, actually, we had Liberation Day. That created a lot of volatility in the market. It caused significant drops in stock prices. So I don't think what's going on with the more affluent consumer right now is just because of the current environment. I think it started sometime last year, and that's why there's been challenges in that market that we're just starting to see more and more of them as we move into 2026.
So if we zoom out from individual company balance sheet, as you said, we talked about tariff. There's also a timing issue playing out across the industry. Tariff, oil prices, they're all dominating the headlines right now. But how much of the real impact are we seeing right now or not seeing right now? Oh, when can we expect more clarity on that impact?
Sure. I think tariffs have, as best they can, worked their way into retail and into goods. I think there are probably very few, if any, companies right now that haven't had to buy inventory that has some tariff associated with it. Having said that, one of the challenges with a lot of retailers or with anybody who's importing goods is what tariff applies and is tariff policy going to change tomorrow? Because it is a moving target. And I think we're in the thousands of different micro tariff policies that we've had over the course of the last year. So that's one piece that we just haven't seen. We don't know what the full impact is going to be, but I would say everybody's now been impacted by it. So I think that's worked its way into the system. Oil has not worked its way into the system yet. I think one of the things that the average person doesn't necessarily appreciate is that petroleum or petroleum byproduct is in just about everything that we touch every day. It's certainly in every plastic. Frankly, it's in some food dyes. It is in everything. And so rising cost of oil is going to have an impact as that works its way into the system. And it'll take time, just like tariffs did, to ultimately work their way fully into the system. When you see oil prices that are being quoted now For Brent crude, that is 2 months from now. That's the price of oil that you're buying 2 months from now. For, and I forget the name of the Texas crude, that's 30 days from now. So when you see those prices, that's not what people are paying for the oil that they're bringing in now. It's not what they paid for the oil or the petroleum byproducts that they put into their goods before. If you have a 6 month lead time on your goods from buying the raw materials to receiving the finished product, that's when your oil is going to start impacting your input costs. And those input costs in whole or in part are likely going to be passed on ultimately to the retailer. Those retailers are going to pass on some or all of that to the consumer. And we're going to start seeing more rising inflation. I think the inflation number that was most recently released started to reflect rising gas prices, which we saw almost immediately. So we're going to be in for more inflation, and it's not something that you can just turn a switch and turn it off and have oil prices go back and then everything's going to be okay. This is going to take time to unwind when the war is over and when oil prices go back to something more stable.
Yeah, definitely going to have far-reaching impacts.
100%.
For distressed companies, though, trying to buy time, liquidity really matters. And that brings up a more tactical question. There has been some chatter about distressed companies potentially benefiting from tariff refund. How real is that as a liquidity lifeline? And what's the realistic timeline for any of that money materializing?
Sure. So let me take that in two parts. The first one, I'll focus on the refund. And then the second one, I'll focus on what there's been a secondary market that's been introduced into this. So first with the refund, I don't believe, so when the Supreme Court issued the opinion and invalidated the tariffs under the law that the administration used, they did not address what happened with refunds. So if you already paid, what's the implication? The assumption is that there will be a refund. I don't believe the administration has come out and said that they are going to issue a refund. And I don't expect this administration, based on a lot of the other policies that they have implemented, to go quietly and just allow refunds to happen. So I would suspect if people are filing refunds or businesses are filing refunds, that those refunds are going to have to work their way through the administration. I would suspect that the administration probably denies some, most, or all of them. And then it's going to have to work its way through the courts. And we probably find ourselves back at the Supreme Court at some point, ruling on whether or not these businesses are entitled to refunds or under what parameters they'd be entitled to refunds. So if a business is saying, I'm going to go the refund route and expect to have a near-term liquidity infusion, I think that's very unlikely. In terms of this secondary market, and I am not, other than hearing and reading a few articles about it, I'm not that familiar with it, but I do believe there are funds out there that are acquiring the rights to these tariff refunds and how much they're willing to pay, how much they're willing to advance against the future refunds in terms of immediate liquidity. I just don't know, but that is a possibility out there. I believe there are even firms that are advertising that they're willing to buy these. So if a business does need liquidity, I think that's something they should look into. I just don't know how viable it is or how much liquidity it's going to bring.
It definitely sounds like it's going to take
years. Anything with the courts takes years.
It would be an understatement. I just stepping back, a lot of the situations we tried.
And sorry, because what you said years, I do want to draw on an analogy. When COVID happened and Congress passed the laws infusing trillions of dollars into the economy in like April, May of 2020, for one of the benefits, and I just can't remember what those laws were called, but one of the laws allowed for losses to be carried further and thereby allow for companies to either file for refunds for prior years or file for additional refunds. So really large refunds. Some of those took, I know in the instance of one company, I think it took almost 4 years from when that law got passed to when they actually finally received an 8-9 figure refund from the government. Because if there are smaller tariff refunds, those, and assuming the government allows them to happen, those probably get processed quickly. Really big ones, they probably take a lot of time. Even if the government says we're going to honor refunds, you're talking about a long time while they work through all of the diligence, process all of it. And the other thing to remember is we just have less employees at the federal government now than we did back in even 2024. So you have less people doing more.
So I wouldn't be counting on the tariff refund.
But I thought that analogy was helpful to put in context. The government doesn't move quickly, especially when it involves a lot of zeros. So
very interesting. So stepping back, a lot of the situation trace back to how retail companies get financed in the first place. We touched upon this earlier, but when you look at a retail company that end up needing restructuring or liquidation, how much of it comes down to how they use debt originally? What's the difference between that builds a business and that hollows it out?
Sure. I think if I were going to answer, I think every retailer needs a working capital facility, some type of revolving line of credit to deal with the fluctuations in the way that they buy inventory and the way that and the rate at which that inventory is sold. And so at a minimum, I think any retailer needs a working capital facility. The question is, if you need additional debt, what's the purpose of that debt? Because any additional debt that you take on is going to have a negative impact on your cash flows, unless the interest picks, right? Or payment in kind, right? If the interest doesn't pick and you have current pay interest, that is a drain on your cash flow. So if I'm a retailer and I'm willing to have a negative impact on my free cash, what am I using it for? If a lot of the retailers that have gotten into problems over the last 15 plus years and had to liquidate or restructure, it was because the balance sheet was just had too much leverage. And more often than not, that leverage came from two things that didn't have a positive impact on the business. They had a positive impact for typically equity. So it was either part of a leveraged buyout where the debt was used to pay part of the purchase price for the benefit of the new equity holder. And so that debt didn't actually, and the free cash flow that goes away from that debt didn't actually impact the business in a positive way. It had a benefit for equity. And the other one is a dividend recap, which takes money out of the business and gets it to shareholders. Now, those transactions in and of themselves, there's nothing wrong with those transactions. But in terms of using debt for that purpose in retail, what you've done then is eliminated the ability for the retailer to use debt in a way that it's actually going to improve the business. So they can't spend CapEx on improving their stores or putting new technology in to make the customer experience better. So new POS equipment or a new e-commerce site or an updated or just saying, we're going to pivot away from this and go towards having a more experiential experience, so to speak, in our stores. You handcuffed your ability to take risk and try new things to see how it works out. Because if you miss and you don't get that new initiative right, do you have the ability to pivot after that? Or did that initiative almost become bet the company? That's a very difficult environment for any management team to work in. And it's particularly hard in retail because a lot of retailers have a true peak to their business. And so for a lot of them, it's the holidays. For some of them, it's back to school there. But for the most part, it's the holidays. If you set off an initiative and you have to wait to be profitable until the holidays and things aren't going well, that only puts that much more pressure on the holidays. And that's a really hard business model. And so that's why I'm not a big proponent of debt in retail beyond that working capital facility or beyond taking it out for something that's actually going to drive a benefit to the business and make the consumer stickier and more likely to shop.
That being said, not every corner of retail is under pressure. Off-price retail keeps outperforming. We're talking about TJ Edge, Ross, Burlington, just to name a few. What is it about their business model that makes it almost counter-cyclical? And do you think that's durable if inflation keeps going up?
Yeah, look, I would say in general, those businesses have built really nice moats around themselves. And they have a broad customer appeal. Off-price has a core customer that likes to shop them day in and day out, whether those are value shoppers who just love finding the deal, or they're the consumer that wants more designer goods, but can't afford to go buy designer goods at full price. That's their core customer. They have that day in and day out. What happens as the consumer starts to get squeezed, they start to look for better buying opportunities. And so they will start to move away from the full price stores and migrate over to off price. And I think that's why off price does particularly well at times, even when other retail's more stressed, because they're attracting maybe customers that they had at points in time before, but haven't been there for a while, or just a whole new customer base. And they have broad customer appeal. So from a price standpoint, there's a large swath of the consumer base that can shop there, and they have broad appeal because they have a lot of designers. So I think that's a great moat that they've created around themselves. And that's why I think they do well. Also, as regular retail starts to show distress, they need to offload goods that they weren't able to sell to their core customer. That creates better buying opportunities in the market because there's more goods in the market for those off-price retailers. And so they have better pricing or buying power, and they can drive price lower because they know that these retailers need to move the stuff to make way for next season's goods. So I think those are two big reasons why that aspect of retail just seems to always outperform. And look, they're also really well-run businesses. Let's not kid ourselves. They have great management teams. They treat their employees really well. There's a lot of benefit to working at those retailers. They attract, because of how stable they are and how well they perform, they attract some of the best talent that's out there. So there's also an execution. They're great executors. And I think those three things are really what drive that area or that aspect of retail to really outperform.
So looking at the second half of 2026, what's the one variable you will be watching most closely that will determine how severe the next wave of retail distress could be?
Right now, it's the Iran war. What it'll be tomorrow, I don't know, because this administration has definitely kept us all on our toes. And I think as you and I talked about at one point, it was a year ago that we had Liberation Day. We still haven't fully worked through all of the tariff-related implications. Now, you have the war in Iran and the long-term implications on oil and geopolitical issues, security, all of those things. Like, it's just because it's happening thousands of miles away in across several time zones and in a really small region of the world doesn't mean that's not, and it, frankly, it is going to have a ripple effect through the entire world economy. And we're not immune from that, even though we are extremely energy independent. So right now I'm really watching the Iran war. The other big variable that's coming, and nobody knows which direction it's going to go, are the midterm elections, right? We have a very divided political system right now, but what we do have for the most part across Congress and the presidency is one party in control. There are thin majorities in the two houses of Congress, but they can get most things done without minority support. If the Democrats win either the House or the Senate, or if they win both, you're going to see more gridlock in Washington. And more gridlock in Washington means we likely could have more government shutdowns, more budget fights. You compound that with a consumer that's getting hit with inflation from the Iran war, even if it's not long-term inflation. Like, all of these things build on one another. And let's be honest, it used to be, if you go back 20 or so years, maybe more, a divided government meant more things got done. So if you had one party in control of the presidency and one party in control of Congress or one house of Congress, there was more compromise. That left our politics a long time ago. Maybe it'll come back one day. I hope it does. But in the meantime, that type of a divided government means more volatility and I think more distress. I think retail, because 60%+ of the US economy is consumer driven, if things aren't going well in the economy generally, it means the consumer is struggling and there's a lot of headwinds for the consumer coming up. So those are the things I'm watching for the balance of the year.
Ian, it's a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your insight on retail. And thank you to our listeners for tuning to this episode of DebtWired. Our team is always available to answer further questions. As always, you can subscribe or download every episode on Apple and find thousands of articles with insight, research, and more from our team at DebtWired.com.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.